You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Chris Dougherty about the current environment of the equine veterinary industry. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2026 by Care Credit. Dr. Christopher Dougherty is the Assistant Director for Strategic Business Research and Outreach at the AVMA. Dr. Dougherty obtained his DVM degree at the Ontario Veterinary College, his MBA at McMaster University's DeGroote School of Business, and is a chartered business valuator. In his role with the AVMA, he analyzes data pertaining to new and early career veterinarians. He works in tandem with the rest of the Veterinary Economics Division to aid in the translation of research findings into tools, resources, and actionable items that veterinarians can utilize and implement in their practices and in their careers. In his spare time, Dr. Dougherty enjoys outdoor activities with his wife and young daughter. Welcome, Dr. Dougherty. I'm so glad to have you with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dr. Grice. It's always nice to chat with you and catch up and connect.
Absolutely. And I love, you know, being able to pull up the annual report every year. It comes out in the spring. The AVMA recently published that 2026 AVMA State of the Veterinary Profession Report. So what can you tell our listeners about the research? Who are the respondents? How do you collect it? And where can people access the report?
Yeah, of course. I'm happy to chat about it. I'm a big fan of the report. I'm probably a little bit biased because I am a co-author on it. But you know, I think there's a lot of great information there, truthfully, for veterinarians of all experience types, all species focus. A little bit about the state of the veterinary profession. So the full title is the AVMA Report on the Economic State of the Veterinary Profession. And this puts together three of our big flagship surveys that we do each and every year. The graduating senior survey. So this is looking at our final year student veterinarians right as they're getting ready to graduate and begin their careers. We have the Census of Veterinarians that looks at the overall population of veterinarians. So veterinarians in private practice, in government, industry, academia, in all different species focus of private practice, and looking at, you know, information like compensation, hours worked, benefits, things of that nature. And then we have our practice owner survey. And so whereas the first two surveys I talked about look at people, the practice owner survey is really looking at the businesses in veterinary medicine. So things like practice revenue, productivity metrics, ways that we can help veterinarians to improve their business and you know, look at what the data is showing us is going on in the industry. As to who the respondents are for our senior survey, yeah, we do have, you know, soon to be graduated veterinarians. We get a really, really great response rate to that. So I'll say thank you to everyone listening who's ever done. Thank you to anyone who's done any of our surveys. But yeah, certainly with our graduating senior survey, we get a really, really good response rate to that. We also get pretty strong representative samples in both our Census of Veterinarians and our practice owner surveys. Now, where folks can access this report, it is available on the AVMA store through the AVMA website. It's available free of charge to AVMA members. That includes SAVMA members, so student AVMA members. There is a price for it if you're not an AVMA member. But yeah, I would say there's a lot of really great information in this report that compiles some of our data from the three big surveys that we do there. So again, you know, a little bit biased, but even before I was working for the AVMA, the State of the Profession report was something I looked at every year that it came out to see, you know, what was going on in the industry and get a bit of a pulse point on trends and you know, economic evolutions of the veterinary field.
Yeah, you know, fellow data lovers, you know, it's a very cool report, and It's fun to look at it year after year. Sometimes when I go back to previous reports, you know, you find even more things because you're starting to see it over a period of time. It's cool. Equine compensation has lagged behind companion animal practice compensation for many years, especially with the starting salaries. How's that looking in this latest report?
Yeah, so this is focused, I think, a little bit more so on our graduating senior survey. So looking at, you know, we're talking about starting compensation. Yeah, you're exactly right. For quite a while there, because we have data on the graduating senior survey going back to about the year 2000. For a long time, our student veterinarians who were entering into equine practice did so at a discount, really, on their compensation compared to their colleagues and their classmates in mixed animal practice, in large animal practice, and in companion animal practice. And then what we've seen in recent years, starting around, I would say, 2022, is that this gap has started to close. So we've seen equine practice compensation levels start to accelerate and climb. And in 2025, it's really very close in line with mixed and large animal practice employment. Now, still a bit of a gap there to companion animal practice, but you know, from an economic standpoint, that has been nice to see because it removes a potential source of disincentive, call it, for people to go into equine practice, right? If somebody really loves horses and wants to practice with horses, and they're looking at this, call it 10 years ago, they're now faced with the reality of earning quite a bit less to go into equine practice compared to mixed animal practice. Today, they could follow their dreams and become an equine veterinarian and earn roughly what they would be earning as a mixed animal practitioner, right? So there's a lot of motivations that go into what makes somebody choose one job or the other. So I'm not saying that money is everything, but that was one source of a disincentive 10 years ago, was that economic disincentive that, you know, is not quite what it used to be. And so that's a great thing, you know, especially for our veterinarians who love horses and want to practice equine medicine.
Yeah, I mean, for me, when I thought about, I had some experience in small animal practice, you know, before I went to vet school. And the thought of being inside all day and, you know, anal sacs and, you know, like smelly things.
Yeah.
I mean, not that foot abscesses can't smell, but like the chance to be outside and drive around from one beautiful farm to another and just be outside with horses all day. What could be better?
I will say the summer of my third year vet school, where I went to school at the Ontario Veterinary College, we had to do an externship, right? It had to be in a mixed animal practice. And I remember it was over the summer. And so driving around in July and August, I was talking to some of the equine and bovine vets. I was like, this is pretty nice. Like you're on the road, you know, going out to farms and seeing people. They almost had me convinced to go into large animal medicine, but not all the way there. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, winter is a little tougher, but
that's what they said too. They said come back in February for a 2 a.m. calving and we'll see if you're singing the same tune.
But stopping for ice cream is not a bad deal.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
The report talks about educational debt totals, and they came down for a few years, but they continue to be concerning, especially for newly matriculating veterinary students because of the limits on their federal borrowing that are going to start occurring. What did the data show about the debt of equine-oriented graduates?
Yeah, so debt has been a big topic of discussion for 20 years, right? And yeah, you're exactly right. You know, for a long time there, we did see debt levels that were climbing year after year after year. During the pandemic, that abated for a time period. You know, there were some stimulus programs, loan forbearance. Interest rates were also very low, right? The Federal Reserve cut interest rates to basically zero. And so all these things helped with some of the debt levels that people had. Now, a lot of that has now changed. You know, interest rates are quite a bit higher as the Federal Reserve was seeking to fight inflation. And so we are seeing over the last few years, debt burdens starting to climb up. Now, I should take a step back for a second and contextualize what we're talking about, because when we report on debt in the AVMA's reports, what we're really reporting on is what's called DVM debt. So that is the debt that somebody incurs during their time in veterinary college. It doesn't include debt that they may have incurred pursuing a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, any other kind of educational attainment. We're really focused on what the debt they accrued during their time at veterinary colleges. And so if we look at the overall population in 2025 that graduated, we had an average DVM debt of about $174,000. If you focus only on those who had DVM debt, so you remove anyone, no debt, the average was about $212,000. If we look at our equine graduates, so those going into equine internships or equine practice, the average of all of them was about $148,000. For those only with debt, so again, removing the zeros from there, it was about $198,000. And to give some context of, you know, that distribution there, we had about 25% of our equine graduates who reported no DVM debt, compared to just shy of 18% of our overall population of respondents to the 2025 graduating senior survey. So yeah, certainly, you know, debt burdens, DVM debt burdens that are relatively high, all things considered. And like you said, you know, with some of the changes to student loan programs that are coming around the bend, debt burdens that you know, probably raise some questions about how that's going to function.
Yeah, I think it will be harder, and people will be probably shopping a little more carefully about what school and, you know, how they're going to live, because otherwise it will affect them in the future.
Yeah.
How about all full-time equine veterinarians? What is their average compensation when we consider all experience levels? And what about, what's the average number of work hours that full-time equine veterinarians work? Because this has been a point of contention for years about how, oh, you work so much harder and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. How does this compare to the companion animal world?
Yeah, so from the Census of Veterinarians, you know, if we look at our equine associate veterinarians, they had an average annual income of about $122,000. This is a little bit lower than what we saw for our companion animal associate veterinarians, our companion animal predominant associate veterinarians, but it is in line with what we saw for our mixed animal practice associate veterinarians. Now, if we look at our practice owner side of things, this is where things are a little bit different, where our equine practice owning veterinarians, their reported annual incomes are actually very, very competitive with companion animal exclusive, with companion animal predominant, and with mixed animal practice, practice owning veterinarians. So a little bit of a different story there on the associate versus the practice owner side of things. Now, when we talk about hours worked, looking at the average hours worked per week by full-time veterinarians, equine veterinarians did report slightly higher number of hours, with an average of about 54, 55 hours per week for full-time veterinarians, compared to 54 for mixed animal practice and about 46 for our companion animal exclusive veterinarians. So, you know, I think our equine veterinarians are working hard, right? You know, I'm not going to say that they're working way more hours than our companion animal veterinarians, but I will say they're earning the compensation that they're receiving, because they are putting in the hours. And, you know, I think some of this ties into some of what you and I have talked about some of what's baked into equine practice, right? Those drives to get to farms, those ambulatory practices, right? Like, those are all hours of work where, you know, if I have to drive 35 minutes to see a horse. That's 35 minutes there. That's the time for the exam, treatment, you know, anything else that needs to be done. That's 35 minutes back. Like, that all adds to my hours of work as an equine veterinarian. And it's something that is a little bit tough to get around sometimes.
It sure is. And the information about being an owner is something that is a soapbox of mine. You know, at one time, I think most veterinarians, you know, decades ago, the intention was that they were an associate to become a little experienced, and then they moved up into ownership, because ownership really is the path to being financially successful and in veterinary medicine. And so it's my soapbox. Ownership is good.
No, and I don't disagree with you. I know Dr. Peter Weinstein has done a lot of work on this, you know, touting the benefits of ownership. I think one thing that's interesting is a colleague of mine at the AVMA, Dr. Annie Chavant, did some research with Vin, looking at practice ownership intentionality as it relates to student debt. And I'm probably going to misremember the exact findings. You know, the research is available, but the Cole's notes of it were that as people's student debt burdens grew, they seemed to become less interested in practice ownership, which I think I do understand from a thought process standpoint. It's like, if I already have $200,000-$400,000 of debt, it gets daunting to take on more debt, right? To take on more debt to purchase a practice. But we can see from the data here that, you know, our practice owner veterinarians are earning higher incomes that would potentially, in a, you know, a profitable practice, help them to support and pay down their debt burdens from undergrad, from their time in veterinary school, and from their purchase or startup of a practice. So I definitely think it's something that our new veterinarians, our early career veterinarians, need to think about, right? Not for everyone, and I'm not going to say absolutely everyone needs to own a practice, but certainly from an economic standpoint, it's something to think about. And, you know, hopefully student debt, DVM debt burdens don't discourage people from pursuing things that they would be interested in.
I mean, absolutely, too. And as a valuator, you know, too, that, you know, really the monies you receive for your return on investment for being an owner should pretty much support the principal and interest on your debt in buying a practice, you know, at a multiple of five. So, you know, it's not like you have to take money from your salary for being a veterinarian. Like, that stays the same.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a win-win.
I would even go a step farther and say that, you know, in discussions with banks that I've had, you know, a while ago now, but if you give a bank a valuation or a pro forma or projected financial statements, they want to see that there is money to repay them the loan and money to pay you as a veterinarian, right? Like, there needs to be a return on investment and a return on labor. There needs to be both there. Mm-hmm. And if you go to them and say, hey, I'm going to buy this practice and I'm not going to earn a dime, I'm going to work for 5 years and I'm just going to pay you back, they're going to say no. Like, they're not going to lend you the money to buy the practice, right? Because they know it's not reasonable for, like, how are you paying for your groceries? How are you paying for your rent or mortgage? Mm-hmm. How are you paying for your electricity, right? So exactly. Like, on the valuation side of things, there is, within that practice value, within that, you know, EBITDA, free cash flow, whatever term you want to call it, there's money to pay for your loan, to buy it or start the business. There's money to pay you to work as a veterinarian. So I could talk valuation.
I know, so could I. I could really go sideways. Yeah, we both could. Yeah. It's a fun thing to talk about. And I think part of the reason that people are afraid is because they're not educated about how possible it is.
Yeah.
You know, so they're like, whoa, no. You know, yeah. The other thing that's really, really interesting about the work that the AVMA does is measuring veterinarian satisfaction with different aspects of their career. And I'd love for you to explain this, but also, what did you find with the equine respondents?
Yeah. So we ask on the Census of Veterinarians about satisfaction. So we ask about levels of satisfaction with people's jobs, their compensation, their lifestyles, and the profession at large, right? And so if we look at the overall population of veterinarians, people reported quite high levels of satisfaction with their jobs, their compensation, and their lifestyles. Where there was a little bit of a lower level of satisfaction was with the profession at large. And I will say, you know, our survey, we're asking a lot of questions about compensation, benefits, hours, work, lots of different things. And so our satisfaction questions are a small portion of the survey, but Merck does a well-being survey regularly where they delve deeper into, you know, wellness, satisfaction, burnout. And I think some of what we find in our Census of Veterinarians echoes what they have found, which is that veterinarians are generally relatively satisfied with their situation, but there's a level of concern there about others. There's a concern about, you know, friends of mine, classmates of mine, colleagues of mine, and how they're faring in the veterinary industry. And I think that that finding reinforces that, you know, that we're finding that satisfaction with the profession is lower than satisfaction on those key aspects of my situation. Now, if we look at equine veterinarians specifically, we see very, very similar results. We see that, you know, 2/3 to 3/4 said that they were either satisfied or very satisfied with their jobs, their lifestyles, and their compensation. But it was about half, it was about 50% said that they were satisfied or very satisfied with the profession overall. So, you know, we are seeing that same dynamic there where our equine veterinarians and our overall population of veterinarians are saying, I feel like I'm doing pretty well, like I'm pretty content with my situation, but I have a level of concern about, you know, others around me. I'm a little bit worried about what's going on in the profession overall. And so, you know, definitely I think the Merck Wellbeing Study does a great job delving into that. If you know, this is an area of interest to your listeners, check out the Merck Wellbeing Study because they ask a lot of really insightful questions and delve very deep into this. So that I think is worth digging into if this is something that people want to learn more about.
Absolutely. Did you see a difference between owners and associates in equine that was any different than the differences overall?
Nothing materially different. It wasn't, you know, I think we see the same trends when we look at mm-hmm. owner and associate veterinarians of different practice types where, you know, some of the levels of satisfaction for practice owners are a little bit higher, things like their jobs and their lifestyles. Some of the other aspects, like, you know, satisfaction with the profession is quite high for public practice veterinarians. So, you know, mm-hmm. those in government, industry, academia, yeah. foreign services, things like that. But overall, you know, relatively high levels of satisfaction for our owners and our associates in many aspects of their situation.
And that's so good to hear. I mean, I think being an associate is always going to be harder in many ways than being an owner in the aspect of not having as much control. And most people thrive on having control over their lives, right? So I think that it's sort of, again, using the word baked in, that if you are an employee, there's going to be areas that are never going to measure up to you know, what you have available in terms of choice and control as an owner.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. I know, you know, one of the things we found in our 2025 Census of Veterinarians was that the group with the highest satisfaction on lifestyle was our relief veterinarians, right? You know, relief veterinarians, right? And I have classmates and friends of mine who do relief work, and that's one of the main things they say. It's, you know what, I have autonomy over my schedule. If I want to take some time off, I have a good friend of mine actually who he does mostly relief work, and he'll work for a few weeks at a time, and then he'll take like a week off and go fishing for a week, and that's his cadence, right? It's like a couple of weeks of work, fishing for a week, couple of weeks of work, fishing for a week. And so, I bet if you asked him, he would say, yeah, I'm really satisfied with my lifestyle doing this. Uh-huh. And it's not, you know, it's not compensation. It's not the tax benefits of being a relief, mm-hmm. you know, independent contractor. It's a lifestyle thing. It's an autonomy and a control thing.
being able to craft the life that allows you to thrive.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's big. It's a big deal. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, I just want to say thanks for having me on. Thanks for your listeners for tuning in. You know, I know we've covered a lot. I would say we've really just scratched the surface in this discussion of what's available. You know, there's a lot of information in the Economic State of the Veterinary Profession report on things that practices can do to be more productive, be efficient. And this is such a crucial part of improving our veterinary practices and improving, you know, our jobs and our lifestyles and the profession overall, so that we can keep up with inflation in expenses, in utilities, in wages, all these things, right? So, you know, I guess the last thing I would leave our listeners with is to please, please, please utilize, download the resources that are available to you, right? We not just us at the AVMA, there are lots of groups like the AAP, but we put together these reports to help veterinarians with their careers, with their businesses, with their lives. So please dig into things like the AVMA report on the economic state of the veterinary profession, all these resources to help you, you know, to have the best practice, have the best career that you can.
Yeah. And let's not forget, there is a new Axon coming out. Do you want to tell people about how to find those and what it's about? Because we just did one.
Yes, yes. So Dr. Grice, you and I just recorded an Axon webinar. So that is available on the AVMA Axon website, where you and I delve pretty deeply into some of the equine data that's available. So for, you know, equine veterinarians that are listening, if you go to the AVMA Axon page, which is axon.avma.org, you can find the webinar that you and I just recorded that talks about, you know, a lot of different metrics for our equine new graduates, for our equine veterinarians, and for our equine practices. So using these resources to help you, you know, benchmark your career, right? Like, what should I be earning? How many hours is normal to be working? What kind of after hours on call work is typical for an equine veterinarian, as well as benchmarking your practice, right? Looking at productivity metrics, looking at revenues, things like that, to better understand where maybe you're overperforming and outperforming, and where there might be some areas, you know, of opportunity to improve.
That's great. And, you know, one of the things I always like to say is if you get to the economics section on the AVMA website, there is so much content there. There are so many resources. And we, as equine practitioners, we often think that those resources are not going to be useful for us, but they're not. They're not just for companion animal people. They're for everybody. And they are incredible. And so I encourage you to like play around, dig around on that page, because there's so much stuff and it's all good. It's all really good. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today. It was wonderful to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. It's like I said, it's always nice to catch up with you and nice to share some information.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And thank you to all our listeners for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave. Embrace change.